Flowers and chocolates are all good, but Specsavers believe that one of the most romantic gestures you could make is to get your hearing checked. Relationships can be tricky at the best of times, so you'll want to avoid any misunderstandings. If you or your partner aren't quite hearing each other clearly, book a hearing check with a Specsavers hearing expert. Not only could it help tackle hearing loss, but it could improve your connection with each other too. For more information and to book your free hearing check, visit specsavers.co.uk.
It's time. The British and Irish Lions journey down under.
This is a fairy tale!
Legends will be written. And Lions will be made. The British and Irish Lions series. Watch every match, including all three tests, live on Sky Sports.
Absolutely incredible!
Available to stream with Now. 18 plus UK only. Broadband 2.5 megabytes per second required.
Looks so excited. Relax. Smile. Look, he's so down on it. He's like, this is going to suck. We'll have some fun. It'll be like 20 minutes, half an hour. All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. We got a good one today. I didn't even realize I was teammates with this guy. So you, when you bounce around the league and you're a suitcase like I was, and I can say, you know, Mike was a little bit of a suitcase himself. We kind of have a similar trajectory to the show. I played with him apparently in San Jose for a cup of coffee. But anyways, Mike O'Haley joins the show. Mike, thanks for joining me, man.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Did you know we played together in 2015, 16 with the Sharks, or 14 or something like that? I looked at the Hockey DB. I was like, holy cow, this guy was on the team with me in San Jose in 14, 15.
Well, we didn't actually play a game together. I think you were hurt or suspended or something. But
probably suspended. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's probably why I was up.
And I'll be honest, I wasn't a fan of you being up. I enjoyed my job. And you get called up and you fight and you play great and you're more of a dynamic player than I am. Like, who the hell is this guy coming in, taking my job in San Jose? And we'll get to that in a second, because you literally did take my job in San Jose because I had the best career statistically in my career, best year, 3 goals. So I was on fire. But I'll save that to the end. I want to talk about you. How you doing, man? You're in Sarnia now? Where are you?
Yeah, I live in Sarnia, Ontario. I played junior here, and this is where I met my wife in high school. So this has been home every off season. And settled down, and kids go to school here and play hockey. And I like it. It's good. It's a good place to live, especially in the summertime. I'm a big fisherman, so there's a lot of great lakes here. And, you know, it's...
What is it with hockey players and fishing? Because, you know, I play with Dustin Byfuglien, Brian Bickell, all these guys, and all they do is fish in the off season. It's just, is it cathartic to get out there on the water and just throw the line in the water and just let go, Michael?
No, I don't do that. That's not my type of fishing. I'm always doing something. I think it just depends on where you grow up. I think it's part of our... I grew up in Oshawa, and the Kawartha Lakes are there, and cottages, and that's, I think it's just part of your childhood, and if that's something you did a lot in the summertime growing up, and obviously being from this part of the country, fishing's big, so
yeah,
it's something that we always did growing up, and then I picked it up again. Once I retired, I was, you know, full bore again. I was still fishing when I was playing. The ponds and the reservoirs and stuff in the big cities. But, you know, when I retired is when I really dove back into it.
Well, sir, for those of you listeners who don't know, which most of you do, Mike O'Haley, you know, probably pound for pound, in my opinion, Mike, one of the toughest guys who played during height. Well, he's 5'5", 212 pounds. So you got to, you know, it's all relative when we look at toughness. But pound for pound, I would say you were one of the tougher cats out there. I didn't like fighting smaller guys. Obviously, you and I never tangled just because I was a super heavy. And you were more of a, you know, a light heavy. But you did go up in weight class the later parts of your career just because you had to. You didn't have that, you know, shotgun guy. But one of the best, most enjoyable guys to play the game. And
I want to start with the OHL because obviously you mentioned Sarnia Sting. You live in Sarnia now. I was just doing a little research before we got on this call, and I was just looking at your first team in Sarnia. You're 16 years old, and I'm just looking at the stats. I'm like, holy hell. Like, you have Dan Carcillo. I played with Danny in Chicago. You have Newberry. I played with him with the Rangers. Great guy. One of the most dual threat guys out there, where he's just elite talent, skill, and just tough as nails. Tyler Hanchuk, Chance Fitzpatrick. And then the guy that stuck out to me, Marco Caprara.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know this name. Nobody knows this name. But when you look at the stats on HockeyDB, he's this little, teeny tiny little guy, 5'8", 170 pounds. He had 300 penalty minutes.
Oh, yeah. I think he had like 39 or close to 40 fights in 68 games, something like that.
As a 16-year-old kid.
No, he was an
18. No, you. I'm talking about you. Oh, yeah. You're coming into this roster in Sarnia. You're obviously a hometown kid. You wanted to play for this team your whole life. And you're stepping into this roster, this team, with all of these absolute animals. Talk about that, because 16 is young. I have a 13-year-old daughter. I know your kids are probably in the same age. Can you imagine just throwing them into that environment? Like, here you go, sink or swim, kid, with these animals. Absolute just animals. Well, talk about that, Mike.
It's not like that anymore, right? I coached for Sarnia here, and it's not that environment anymore. It's not the same hockey. But yeah, looking back on it, it developed a lot for me and taught me a lot of life lessons. It also was very hard at the time, I think, which, you know, understandably, there's a lot, like, it's hard for a normal 16-year-old just in life.
Yeah, right.
With that amount of pressure and then being around, you know, it's a lot different now. Like, me and Brad Stavitz always talked about it when we're coaching. Like, we would show up to camp. I remember being 16. Like, Tyler Hanchuk was like 6'4". He had a goatee that went down to here, and he was a killer. Like, he would go get the other team's net and bring it over and warm up. Like, you know, you've heard all these stories. Like,
yeah.
And it was a different life, and these kids back then too. It wasn't like it is now. Like, guys weren't going to high school. They were there just to play junior. And, you know, basically living like almost like an East Coast lifestyle, East Coast League lifestyle in junior.
Yeah.
Noobs, you talk about Noobs. Noobs had already had his firstborn kid. When I was 16, Noobs had a kid. Him and his wife had a
Not that it's a bad thing, but it's just like,
you know, he was picking up the pizza boxes after the bus trips, bringing them home. We were getting our $40 cash. He was going to get diapers and, you know, from the front office. So it was definitely an eye opener. It wasn't all good. There was a lot of, but again, those are things that I learned.
Yeah.
You know, when it was my turn to be the older player, learned not to do. You know, there's a lot of people that they don't like what's done to them, and then they just do it. And I never understood that.
I don't want to go into the Carcillo thing because I played with him, and Danny, he's a sensitive guy, but he's been through a lot. So I don't want to touch on that, but I made the St. Michael's majors when I was that same age. My dad opted not to have me play OHL, not because he knew, you know, all the stuff that goes on, but I don't think he thought I was going to play very much. But you're in your hometown. You grew up in Oshawa. Which is actually quite a far away from Sarnia then. Yeah. So it's not like you're in your hometown. Well, you talk about like what pressure was there? Because was there pressure to play? Was there pressure to do well? Like, were you drafted to Sarnia?
I was drafted. I was there. I was an underager. So I was their only underager. The pressure being in the sense that like I'll never forget this. Like, I was there a week earlier doing a camp that the coach was running, and it was all, you know, fun and games, and he was laughing, and everyone's treating me really good, and they want you to come there, right? And then I remember, like, the first day of camp, his attitude, I was, like, watching him down the hall, and I was like, hey, and it was, like, completely 180. Like, you're here now. We got you. You can't. Like, we're not friends.
You're just like, what happened to summertime coach?
Yeah. And I remember there was a moment too where we were playing and you know, we obviously with that team, we took a lot of penalties. But I remember a rant that he was going on. It was early in the season, you know, breaking fans and everything. And it was like, you're taking food off of my kid's table. Like, I remember him saying that line. And I was like, I'm 16 years old. And I'm sitting there like, what? You're just playing hockey. What are you?
Yeah.
And that's where I like realized like, holy, like this is people's lives. Like this is his job. This isn't me showing up to the rink anymore, playing and then going home. Like this is a lot of pressure. And obviously at 16 too, I was, like I said, everyone treated me really good. I was told all this and this, and then I'm not playing, you know, you're barely playing if you're not a healthy scratch. And that's really hard it was really hard on me even as an adult, let alone a 16-year-old that was been told that he's really good. So, but again, it was looking back on it, that year, as awful as it was, probably helped me tremendously in making my own career, because I had to decide, like, am I going to let other people dictate things, or am I going to put my nose to the grindstone and do what I want to do? So,
yeah, it's crazy.
It you know, it's all how you flip the script and turn it into something good.
Right. And I just, cause listen, we've been around the game, just you're the success story. Right. And it's crazy. And I desperately wanted to play in the OHL. Like I did not realize my dad told the coach I wasn't going to be on the team until I was in my 30s. And I was like, what the hell did you do that for? But did you see guys, you're the success. How many guys did not, you know, turn out the way you did? Where'd they go in at 16 and 17 and the coach is being a prick to them, or they're challenged, or they're not getting ice time? Because countless guys, like you just flame out in the OHL and it's like, okay, what do we got to show for it? Like I have a high school degree, barely, like you said, and now I got no prospects whatsoever.
Yeah. I don't know though. Like that's, well, I mean, you know, but I get dealt with this all the time, right? Like, it, to me, that is a skill, just as someone else can skate fast, or, you know, your mental toughness and mental fortitude and being able to navigate obstacles in your way and stuff, it, to me, is a skill, you know. Mm-hmm. So, like, you're not born with grit, you learn it. And so, you know, and what I say is, you and I, is too, I always get people that were like, you know, oh, he was really good. He was really good. If it was now, he would have made it. There's always a reason. And I think what I take pride in is that there was thousands of reasons, and I said, I didn't let them apply to me. So I love when people are always like, so and so was really good, or he could have been this, he could have been that, and it's like, well,
he wasn't.
I'd be a model if I was better looking, but that's not the way it works. Do you know what I mean? Like you can't be like that. Like there's always, if you wanted it and you could have done it, you would have done it.
My one of my good buddies always says, if my aunt had a penis, he'd be my uncle, right? But he doesn't. So it's one of those things. Yeah, I get that too. It's like, oh, you know, I'm way more talented than you. If I would have got a break in this and that, I would have made the show. Because I play, you know, shinny hockey, and I'm not the best player on my team or in the league. I'm just like, yeah, but, you know, you didn't. So exactly. Let's just move on. Yeah, it's just, so what, like, what are we talking about here? So you finish with Sarnia, you go to Toronto for your overage year.
Yeah.
And something clicks, Michael. You go from getting 3 goals, 8 goals, 2 goals. You had a 14-goal season in Sarnia. Then you go to Toronto, and you get 12 goals in 30 games. 0 assists, by the way. You're not really a big disher. And then your last season in the 30 goals. 24 points, 174 PIMs, like a complete outlier for the first 4 seasons in the O. What happened that season in Toronto? Did everything just click?
No, actually, it's the opposite. I think what
happened. Oh, nice. Okay, cool.
Is I was so, and you know this too, just from knowing me from what you do, is I was always focused on doing whatever role I thought they wanted me to do.
Yeah.
So I was the gritty leader that fought and stuck up for everybody and did all this. That's how they, but then they changed coaching staffs and ownership and everything. And it was like complete 180. And I was sitting there going like, well, this is how you guys taught me how to be. So And then when I went to Toronto, honestly, at 20 years old, you know, 19, and you're going into your overage year, I actually just thought, okay, like, I'm not going to be a professional hockey player. So I just did what I wanted to do. I played hockey the way I wanted to play hockey. And I didn't, you know, that pressure, everything was gone. I was just going to go to school, and it didn't matter anymore. I always want the team and the coach and everybody to look at me as like, I'll be to do anything for them. And at that point I was just like, hey, well, now I'm going to do this for me. And obviously also I'm 19, 20 years old. I weigh 225 pounds in a league that no longer all the tough guys, the actual tough guys are gone. So it wasn't very hard. Like, you know, I had 30 goals, but I was also probably the most sleep deprived, dehydrated person in that league.
Hitting the sauna and training probably all the time. Like, you were probably just an animal in the weight room. But it's funny, the mental game. It's funny, the mental game, Mike, because I think you probably went through this in the NHL too. When I got to the show, I was excited. Then it quickly became a job where it's okay. There's 1,000 guys who want my position. It got fun for me again. And it's weird how our careers, the teams, overlap a little bit. It got fun for me when I went to San Jose. I had been in the league 6 years. And then you get to that locker room, and I'm sure you could echo this. I saw you for Jumbo's retirement. It was just a different environment. And being around a team that understands that hockey isn't everything. You know, like it's a secondary thing in the grand scheme of things. It was an older team. They had families. And walking into that room in the leadership group of Jumbo and Pavelski and Burns, yeah, they worked hard, but they still realized, like, we're here to have fun. I don't know. And it was the greatest year I played in my career was that 1 year in San Jose until you came and ruined it. But it was so fun. You've been on a bunch of teams, you know, the Islanders, the Rangers, Panthers, Sharks, obviously twice, then the Senators. Was that Sharks locker room the best you've ever been around? Because to me, it was so rock solid.
Hands down. People always ask, you know, where was my favorite place? And it's always like Florida was my favorite place to live and play away from the rink type thing. And also the stages of your life and your career, right? Like when I was in Florida, I had 2 kids. And so went to school, like it was like, but San Jose, that locker room, you know, to this day, that's still my hockey friends are usually the ones from the Sharks. Right. And it's funny, you named those 3 players and they're like those are 3 huge names you dropped. And yet we could have done 8 more on top of that. Right. Like the Pauly Martins, I was really tight with Wardo when I played Joel Ward and Patty Marleau. Like that team was, it was crazy. And it was, I think the other thing with that team too, when you have older guys, especially guys that played through the different stages of hockey, you know, they also respected what we did a lot more.
Yeah.
Not a lot more. I shouldn't say that, but they didn't look at it as like, you know, it was a value to them, not a you're taking someone's spot or type thing, you know?
No, they got it. And it was great playing for guys who understood what we brought to the team. And even Jumbo's retirement, I'll never forget. He played with so many Hall of Famers. And then you're riding the bus to the rink for whatever it was. And there's you, there's me, there's Nazarov. There's all these tough guys. And I was like, this is pretty legit. Like, I played with Jumbo for 1 season. You were there for like 2.5. And he has that much like respect and friendship with us that he invites us in. And it was just so cool. Even in the hotel lobby, you know, one night I'm looking around, I'm like, okay, there's Danny Heatley, there's Boiler, there's all these stars, Marlowe, like all these great Nabokov. And then there's meatheads like Desjardins and you and me. And I'm just like, this is like Brownie, a cool mix of players. Raffy. Yeah. Tico was there and Mike Brown. Like, it's just like, it's a whole group of just weird dynamic of players. But yeah, it was so nice to be appreciated for a little bit. Cause we always get dumped on left, right, and center, but I don't know. I wanted to just anything else on that. Cause it was so fun.
Well, I think that also hits on what you said though. I think that yes, hockey is very important and they put value in what we could bring. I think they were also older and wiser too. Like they were like, okay, well, yeah, as far as the, you know, our style of play and stuff, they're like, well, why would we want another person to do what I'm doing when we can, our, you know what I mean? But then also, like you said, they, hockey was very important and everything, but they had families, they had lives. They also like, so when we walked into a dressing room, it wasn't, oh, John Scott, the fourth line player. It was John Scott, the human being. And like, that was, you know what I mean? Like they were our friends. And then hockey was where you were in the hockey pecking order wasn't right. And we've seen that there with those guys all the time. Like it doesn't matter if you're,
your paycheck doesn't matter.
Yeah. You know, they don't care. So,
and that's a real thing.
We were so good too, is that everybody
bought it. And that's a funny thing because my, gosh, my wife hated that because we played on teams where obviously every team, the paycheck kind of is different, where I'm making 800, 700 grand and, you know, 8 million, 9 million. She felt it in the wives' room where she's like, I can't go talk to, you know, Marion Gabrick's wife just because it's just, there's a disconnect. But in San Jose, like we were going to eat at Jumbo's place. She was friends with Marlo and, you know, it was just, there was no, you know, none of that crap, which was so refreshing. Because for a lot of the teams, that's very real, where it's like, oh no, you're a fourth line healthy scratch, like beat it. You're not a part of this group. And it was just cool to be like, I'm going to hang out with Bernsey and his kids and his wife. Like it was really nice. And you ruined it. You stole that from me. Do you think about that a lot? How you took my life?
I took your life at 20. I think I was 28. So think about how many times I had done that before, and that's what I thought happened, and then gone again.
When I got on that bus and I saw you, I was like, I'm going to jump this guy. Like he took everything I had away from me. And I had to use all my self-restraint to not do that. And I sat in front of you and we had a nice chat on the way to the rink. And I'm glad I didn't, you know, give in to my urges because I felt that, Mike. I honestly felt that. All right, let's back up because you're done with the St. Michael's majors. I'm trying to get through this chronologically, but I get sidetracked every now and again. No offers to play anywhere? Or what was the bidding like for Michael Haley coming off a 30-goal season? You're obviously now being approached by teams. So, you're going to play like pro hockey.
It's time. The British and Irish Lions journey down under.
This is a fairy tale!
Legends will be written. And Lions will be made. The British and Irish Lions series. Watch every match, including all three tests, live on Sky Sports.
Absolutely incredible!
Available to stream with Now. 18 plus UK only. Broadband 2.5 megabytes per second required.
I'm not switching my team to some fancy work platform that somehow knows exactly how we work. And its AI features are literally saving us hours every day. We're big fans. And just like that, teams all around the world are falling for Monday.com. With intuitive design, seamless AI capabilities, and custom workflow, it's the work platform your team will instantly click with. Head to Monday.com, the first work platform you'll love to use.
Well, no, so I had had all my schools, you know, packages. So I was planning on, I think I was actually enrolled in, and where did Wardo go? I think University of PEI or something like that.
Yeah, he went out east, yeah.
And then, so I was enrolled there, and that's what I was going to plan to do. But then after my OHL, my overage year, at the end of the year, I got to go to South Carolina to play their last, like, 6 or 7 games. And I was like, sure, whatever, like, doesn't do any harm. And then when I went there, also South Carolina is, like, a great place to play.
Right? Yeah, why not go there for
a but I went there and I think I had like 6 or 7 goal, like almost a goal a game. I think I only had to have one fight. I think I fought that big, you know, Riley, the Emerson, the really tall guy.
Oh, I played with him in Houston. Yeah, that's funny.
And then, so I was like, but when I was there, I realized like, oh, like this is pro hockey. Like I can play this. Like I'm, right, my goal game. This is the end of the season. It's not like it's the beginning. Like so, so then after that happened, it is when I started to get some phone calls, and then the next year I signed a 2-way deal with Bridgeport and Utah Grizzlies. So And then again, same thing. I actually made Bridgeport out of camp. A guy that I play with in Toronto, we were on the same team there, and we went to Bridgeport, and we both thought that we both had messages on our hotel phone to go to the rink. So we were waiting, and we were sitting in that rink for like 3 hours. And then finally Jack Capuano, who, you know, he's coached me a lot in my NHL career, yep, and the AHL, and Cappy comes out and he's like, "What are you two doing here?" And we're like, "Well, we got messages saying, ah, that was for your roommates. You're good." So then we thought we made the team. We did. And then the next day we show up to practice, and a couple guys, I think it was Timmy Jackman and Bootlin, they got sent down from the island. So then we got cut and went to Utah.
It
was good. It was fun. Utah was awesome. I think I only played like a month, and then I got called up and never had to go back until the end of that season when Bridgeport was out. We went back for playoffs, but it was a blast. But again, it was the same thing. I think it was just, you know what? This is the best way to put it. You're really big, so you have to prove you can play. Smaller players have to prove we can over and over and over again. And that's just why I back to that first
I guess
year.
For your ilk. I think that's for you, yes, what you were trying to be, right?
Well,
because
I wasn't trying to be anything. I was always pegged as like, I wasn't skilled enough to be a skilled guy. I wasn't big enough to be a tough guy, but yet there was always someone that loved to use my services.
Yeah.
So it was like,
oh, it's interesting. I never thought of it that way, because I felt the same way. I felt the same way where people didn't think I was skilled enough to play hockey, where, oh, you're just a big dumb goof and all you're out there to do is fight. And I'm like, well, no. Cause like, you know, have you ever met Mitchie Fritz or those guys where it's like, okay.
Yeah.
So Mitch, I feel like, isn't a super talented player.
No.
But I didn't want to be lumped into the Mitch Fritzes of the world. And I know Mitch too. You know, I've talked to him many times, but I wanted to be like a Hal Gill.
Yeah.
Or a Corey Cross. Those are the guys I'm like, I can get behind that. Whereas I didn't fight because I went to college. And so I was always fighting the people trying to put me into the fighter role, if that makes sense. Yeah. Whereas like, I don't want to fight.
Yeah. Wow. But you, so how, what was an average fight total for you a year?
6-7.
So that's like a weekend for me in the mind. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is what I'm trying to get at.
No, I get it. I get it. So let's talk about that.
I have to play. I play, you know, between 15 and 20 minutes when I'm in the minors. You know, not at the beginning, but so do you know what I'm saying? Like, I always fought, and it wouldn't matter. If I played 30 minutes, I'd still fight. I like it, but it's not. It's just,
no,
what
I get
I'm
it.
Trying to say is that, yeah. So, but again, that first year was my most fun year as far as the fighting goes. I think I had like maybe almost 30, like 20 something that year when you add it all up in all the different leagues and the exhibitions and stuff, 30 fights. But I think it's like, that was the most fun because back then it wasn't like this right now. Right. So I showed up as a 5'9" guy running around.
5'6".
No, I'm 5'9" 3/4". Just above average. Just above average height. But all these guys don't know me. There's no video. There's no Instagram. There's no nothing like that, right? So, you can imagine when I'm chasing people and hitting them and playing and being a disturber. Correct. Out there, and getting under their skin, and then they all look and they're like. So I probably, out of those, if we say I had 25 fights, half of them were against guys that have no business fighting me. So it was awesome.
It
was probably the most fun in that aspect.
And you're playing in a league in Bridgeport now because you're Utah for the first month, and then you go to Bridgeport. I was in Houston at the same time. So I'm out West, and it was a decided difference between the West and the East and the AHL at that time. The West was sort of tough, but not to the extent of the East. When you look at the players who were playing in, you know, Wilkes-Barre and Binghamton and Providence and Hartford and Worcester, and it was like Zach Fitzgerald, Francis Astard, Louis Robitaille, who was an absolute killer, Morasti and JD Watt, an unknown super heavy, Kip Brennan. And you're stepping into that environment and you're playing the way you play. Like, you're a physical player. Was there ever a time where someone grabbed you, you know, those first couple of years, and was like, hey, kid, like, enough is enough. Like, we're going to beat your doors off. Or were you just, did you have the protection to just do whatever you want, kind of?
No, I also, like, I didn't really care. Like, I think, like, that year alone, it's like I fight, like, I don't know, I couldn't even think of a name, but a guy that's had three fights in his career. He was a second round pick or whatever, we'll say. And then later on in that game, I fight Kevin Westgarth or.
Right. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I've never, I'm also, you guys are big. So you have the fear, not a fear. I don't want to say fear, but if you lose a fight, it's bad on you.
Yeah.
It doesn't bother me one bit. I'll just fight you again and again and again and again. And that was my, that's what made me effective, is that I didn't care. Like, it was, and I enjoy it. So I was like, well, and it's funny now. I look at it now. By the end of my NHL career, like, guys that were supposedly the tough guys or that played physical, and they would be like trying to be my friend. And I remember we used to line up. Like, if I got sent down in the end of my career, if we flipped it, when I was starting in the AHL and a guy like me got sent down to the NHL, he would have 10 guys chasing him trying to fight him, because now you can just jump up ranks, and if you lose, it doesn't matter because you've lost. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like, it's not like that anymore. Now they were all like being nice to me, and I was, it actually became a bit boring. Like, there was no, like, not rivalry, but like, you want to play, I want to play, like, on that edge. Like, you want to get excited and riled up.
No, I get it.
Yeah.
Because I got sent down to St. John's when I was done. And it was just, it was almost like a glorified Sunday skate where no one was fighting whatsoever. I had to create the animosity.
Yes.
Like, to the point where I'm like, yeah, let's, like, let's get something going here. Cause I think the social media and the summer skates and all this crap, everybody's buddies. And they're, and there's
buddies,
no,
and everyone's afraid of the optics of losing.
Yeah.
And it drives me nuts. Yeah. Like, that's not tough. Tough is, and it's funny, like, I have two boys, and you would think that I would teach them how to fight and do all this and be, and it's the opposite. I teach them that getting hit is tough, not giving it. Like, if you can get hit and keep coming, that is what's tough. Not anybody can give punishment, right?
I think you just quoted a Rocky movie. It's not how hard you can hit.
Keep coming.
It's how hard you get hit and keep moving forward.
You know what I mean? Like,
that's beautiful, Michael. So yeah, let's, 100%. But you and I are on different planes here. Like, I can't live in that reality where I can't lose. You know what I mean? Where if someone tags me, that's why I hated fighting guys like you. Like, Cam Jansen, I couldn't stand fighting him. I fought him a bunch of times. I'm like, Cam, you're so boring to fight. You hide. And then when I'm dog tired, you hit me with one and the crowd goes wild. And I'm like, great. Now it looks like I lost a fight, even though I tagged you 50 times. So it was apples and oranges. Like, that's why I liked fighting the Peroses, the bigger guys of the world, because I knew it was just a toe-to-toe fight, and I will win those.
Yeah.
You guys were annoying. All right, Michael, moving on. This is where it gets real. You obviously, you tooled around the AHL for a long time. You were there for nine years, up and down every once in a while. You finally make the NHL in 2015, I want to say, with the 16-17, first full-time roster. But before you get there, that one night in February, we got to talk about it. Because I was, you know, with the Minnesota Wild at the time, I believe, and I'm watching the highlights. A week before, obviously, Blake Como gets buried by Cam Talbot. Matt Cook runs Rick DiPietro, and there's a little bit of a melee. You're sitting in Bridgeport at the time. You're there with Trevor Gillies. When do you get that call from the Islanders? Because they're playing Pitt a week and a half later. Do you get the call right away saying, hey, boys, we need you? Or is it like the day before the game versus Pittsburgh?
I don't remember when I got the call. But obviously, the good thing about back then, right, like, that was only, I think, my third or fourth year in the league, but that – the good thing about back then is, like, there were still roles. So if, you know, if Doug Weight gets hurt, I'm not, you know, and you're on the bus in the AHL and you see that Doug Weight got hurt, I'm not like, oh, I'm getting called up. But if Richard Park or, you know, someone that played on the fourth line gets hurt, they're also not going to call up their first the skill guy that's playing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there was,
yeah.
So obviously after that game, the boys were talking about it and I was like, oh, nice. Maybe they'll be, you know,
nice.
A chance to make some money here. But I don't remember when they called us up, but before you get going, and it's funny, everyone talks to I remember when this game happened, but just so it's out there, I also led the Bridgeport Sound Tigers in goals when I got called up. So they weren't just calling me up. It's funny, like everyone's always, you know what it's like when you get called up and everyone's like, oh, they're calling up a goon. I was like, what? If they had worded it, we're calling up Bridgeport Sound Tigers leading goal scorer, would it have been that bad?
True. Yeah, you have 10, 12 goals at that point. You were playing pretty good hockey. So you get called up to the Islanders. And everybody knows what's going on. You know, the Islanders are having a terrible season. They're struggling. That's when they were just, you know, not a lot going right for them.
Yep.
Pittsburgh's playing pretty well. They got Crosby, Letang, Malkin. Like, this is their Stanley Cup window.
Yep.
You just been not waxed. You lost 3-0 a couple weeks before. What's the vibe like in the room? Because you already had Knopper, you had Martin, then you get you and Gilly. So it's obviously the writing's on the wall. What's going on in the room? Is there anything said between you guys? Because obviously you know Knopper, you know Gillies. Are you guys saying, okay, this is what's going to happen?
I don't know. I don't remember. And
okay.
It's funny. Like I always tried to not go full bore one way or the other. So even if they were, like I never wanted to be just like categorized as the guy that's going to come up and fight. So even if it was, I would have found a way to distance myself a little bit, but still be in there. Like, I still want to be part of your crew, but I also don't want to be, you know how you said you always get lumped in, right? Like, so, also it was my third ever NHL game that would have been. So I played two the year before at the very end. So I'm also nervous and excited and trying to prove that I can play up here. But I don't remember if anything was said. Obviously it was, you know what's going on, you know the situation. So I think my first shift I got a roughing penalty, my second shift I fought, the third shift, you know, like we knew what type of game it was going to be. But it was definitely one for the ages.
Well, it was an epic game and in a lot of sorts. People forget that you scored your first NHL goal that game. Like when you look at the box score, when you go back and watch the game, you played great. And I think it's really kind of neat and self-aware of yourself to know that I need to separate myself from these guys because it's nice, you know, being tough, but that's not going to give me a 10-year NHL career. That's not going to let me, you know, play for all these teams. It's going to be great for this one little moment, but then I'm back down to the AHL doing what these guys do for the rest of my career. So it's cool that you differentiated that. And when you watch that game, you did that.
Yeah. And I think that's, like I said, life lessons of growing up, like, you know, playing junior. And I think that I learned, like, you know, what was the difference between when I went to St. Mike's and Sarnia? Well, the difference was, as I learned that I wanted to be the tough guy in Sarnia because that's how they told us we should be. And I didn't get drafted. I wasn't getting any love from anybody, you know, like, okay. So I was like, okay, well maybe. And then if you go the whole other way, I can't do that either. I can't just, you know, cause it's not in me. So, I think I realized that I wasn't big enough to be a tough guy in people's minds and I wasn't skilled enough to be a skilled guy. So I was like, well, maybe there's room for someone who could do a little bit of both. So I didn't want to, and it's hurtful. I hate when people just say you're just a tough guy. Like, and especially for me, I was like, well, I fight 40 times a year, 30 times a year, 25 times a year and play. So you show me someone like, how is it? Oh, you're just a tough, like, it's not just anything. It takes a lot on you. So.
No, it's hard. I can't imagine you because I was for a lot of my career just that's all I did. I played 4 minutes and I did not like it. I knew it was my job and I put food on my table, but it's like come on, like I am. There's more there.
Yeah.
But you know, I didn't bitch and moan because it was my job and I knew what it was. But yeah, it's tough and it's got to be weird. Yeah, I never thought of it. You're playing 15 minutes. You're scoring 10, 20 goals a game in the AHL, but people still, oh, Michael Haley, what a goon. Mm-hmm. Like he's terrible at hockey. What a goon. Get him out of the game. That's kind of
but
it's going to wear on you a little bit.
The Brent Thompson, he actually, when I had him in Bridgeport, he said it best. He was like, I think one time I might have not fought someone. I said no, because it was probably somebody who doesn't even play in the minors. And then I wasn't on the power play, the next power play.
Oh, no kidding.
And I led the team in power play goals at the time. So I was like, so then obviously I'm in the office after, and we're got each other by the necks. And I'm like, what's going on? And he was like, listen, you can stay down here and you can score 20, 30 goals a year and make a couple hundred grand for the rest of your career. Or do you want to play in the NHL? Like, and so, like I said, like, I also knew that I would rather play, if it meant to it, to play 6 minutes and have a fight in the NHL than playing 20 yeah. minutes. You know, like that was my, I was okay with that if that's what it took, and just buying time until hopefully I can be a regular. But yeah,
get
but
anyway, your chance. Back to that game.
Yeah, I scored a goal. It was a nice goal too. But I think I got to be the only guy too to fight the same goalie that he scored his first NHL goal on. There's no way that someone.
Well, and then to get in three fights and do what you did. So you obviously fight Adams, and I think it was the first period.
Yeah.
And then you get tangled up with Max Talbot. So two, you know, pretty easy fights for you. And then as you're going to the box, because it's a line brawl and Trevor Gillies has just gone full retard at yeah. the moment, you're skating back to the box. And I'm sure you told this story before, but I've never heard it. Johnson's sitting there. He's at the blue line. You lock eyes. He's obviously looking at you. Do you just yes. It's your third game, Mike, in the NHL. Your third game. What are you thinking as you're skating? You're supposed to be going to the box. What's going through your mind?
Well, yeah. So Gills gets Tan Grady, and then there's a big scrum, and Talbot's the one that hit Como. So
yes,
when I saw that, I was like, nice, this is perfect. Like, I'm going to get him back. And I hit him once and he's down, and then there's no refs though. So because it's a line brawl, and it's funny, like you're just your muscle memory. So like I get up off of him and I start to skate to the box because I'm used to doing that.
Yeah. That's and where you're supposed to go.
When I'm doing it and I'm looking around and I'm like, there's nobody even escorting me. And then he was at the blue line. And so I like pointed to him and he pointed to me and I was like, okay, why not? So then I started to skate down. Now, luckily I actually saw Goddard jump off the bench though out of my peripheral. So that's why I tried to turn this way. I just thought that someone would get him after. I wore like two or three. And then on the fourth one, I like felt air go by my head. And I was like, okay, I better not let this big guy hit me in the back of my head. I probably won't wake up.
No, because see, you talk about tough guys who can throw bombs. He is probably one of the top 10. Like, that guy's an animal. So do you ever pay for a meal now when you go back to the island? Because you were revered. Like, that was in a decade of just terrible hockey and then just losing. That was a moment that people in the island just go, yeah, but, you know, February 11th, that was our night. So we waxed the Penguins 9-3. Dominated them in the fights. Like, how funny, you get retribution for Rick DiPietro. Did he ever come up and give you a tap being like, hey, thanks, man?
Oh yeah. Yep. He was happy about us, but yeah. And I think, and we did fairly well after that too. And I think, and it was like old school too. We'd have games where, like, you know, if a team was beating us up by three, we would, you know, Gillies, me, Gills, I think we had Joel Reklish sometimes. Like
the wrecking ball.
You know, Marty, we had the wrecker, yeah. Marty, you know, Konopka, like we would skate by their bench, but you guys score one more and it's like now we have free-for-all. So they would like, we would always be in games because guys would be like, okay, let's not win by too much, and then we'd be there, right? So it was like the old style way. And when you're bottom of the barrel like that, you have nothing to lose. And half of us that were doing it, we have nothing to lose because we've been pretty much exiled for so long that we were also like, yeah, well, whatever, what's going to happen to us? They're going to send us back down and do what we always do. So
do you think
it was probably the best? I was very fortunate. It was the best thing for me because,
yeah,
you know, them, the fans turning me into some kind of cult hero actually made it where they couldn't send me down for a long time. And I'm sure Snowy would have loved to. You know, I'm sure he would have just like, but it was like, they can't, like, they're finally getting some traction positively. Not that
with
it was
the fan
just
base,
me,
right?
You know what I mean?
Yeah. But then you did parlay that. You had a good season, and then you kind of, you know, you bounced around on the East Coast for a while after that. You know, Connecticut, Hartford, Worcester, and then you finally found your foot in San Jose. But I we're already at 45 minutes here. This thing, when you get talking, Mike, it gets long, so I'm not going to keep you too much longer. But there was one moment in San Jose I kind of did a poll on Twitter. What do you want to talk to Michael Haley about? And again, I didn't catch this either. I was busy doing other things, probably playing wherever. What's your problem with Cale Yarncroc? And why would you do that to that poor guy against the Nashville Predators? Because, you know, I think it's, you know, the F around and find out. This thing they do, FAFO, where you poke the bear and then you find out why you shouldn't do that. If you haven't seen this clip, go on YouTube and look it up. But it's just so funny that this guy buries you from behind. And then you click. There's a moment where you're like, should I stay down? You're like, no, I'm getting up. I'm taking care of business. And you chase him around the rink for a little bit. And you bury him with the biggest left hand I think I've ever seen in my life. And it goes right on the button. Walk us through that moment. Because did you just – the wires crossed and you're completely out of control? Because it's so funny to see this little – I don't even know if it's a Swede or a Finn or whatever.
Yeah,
he's running for his life after he just buries you from behind. It's just so – it's just really funny to watch.
Yeah, so we were losing that game, mm-hmm. 5-2 at the time. So I'm playing like playing normal.
That's so funny.
But I had already fought McLeod, I think, earlier on. So I already fought their tough guy.
Yeah.
And this guy hits me from behind, and I was like, at first I was just like, he hit me from behind. But then when I looked up and saw, and then it all just clicked at once, like. And it was just like so much anger of like, who does he think he is hitting me? He's never hit anybody in his life. And he wants to hit me from behind.
He buries you.
Already, do you know what I mean? Like you kind of feel like you deserve a little bit of a bubble around you.
Yeah.
At some point. Right. And so then, and when I looked up, he kind of had like a little smirk on him too. Like he was like, oh, no. I gotcha. So that's when I like went. And there was all the people in front of him, and then they just parted. And I don't know if he thought they were going to part. But the best part about that is after I played them the next game too, like if that happened to my team, there'd be people lined up. Like it was almost like they were all – and I don't know this, but it was almost like they all went in the room and they're like, what were you thinking? Like why would you do that? You know what I mean?
They're like, yeah, that's what you deserved. Like you deserve that punch.
I had my hearing and my suspension. That was the stipulation. I got one game for excessive roughing. They had to take away the sucker punch because I'm like, he saw me. He just simply chose not to engage. Like, but he saw me coming. And I said to them, I'm like, you could suspend me. You guys should be paying me. You probably never hit anybody from behind ever again.
You should be paying me. That's one thing I wanted to ask you actually after the Bridgeport thing, because I've been a part of a couple brawls, Toronto and Anaheim and this and that. Did you talk to the player's safety after that and so, have any
actually,
warning?
That's funny. So I remember being in Buffalo, and again, I've played 3 games in the National Hockey League, 2 the year mm-hmm. before and this one. And we were in Buffalo and everybody's having their hearing. Gillies, Marty, everyone's got all these hearings lined up and they're all doing it in the hotel. And I'm been told to be down there, and I'm sitting and I'm waiting, and then my agent's with me too, and then finally after like an hour he was like, okay, you can go. And I was like, I don't have to hear. He goes, no, but I was given a warning, like they told my agent, like, tell him, like, be a warning. But technically I broke no rules. I never was escorted anywhere. I was never, do you know what I mean? Like I just basically I just exploited everything, but I never actually broke a rule. I was in a fight. I was on my way to the bus. There was nobody escorted me. So it's not like I never stepped off the ice. I never did. So I technically didn't break any rules to get anything more.
Right? Uh-huh. Whereas so Goddard gets 10 games for coming off the bench.
But yeah.
That's funny. The technicality got you. Yeah. Cause I've been, did you talk to them at all after that? Because I remember there was a swath of rounds where it was Chris Pronger at the time where he actually came to Phoenix and he sat me and Steve Downey down and he goes, listen, before the season, he goes, we're watching you. You know, we know what kind of player you are. And I'm like, Pronger, Like, you were worse than us. Like, what are you talking about? You're still getting paid, bud. Like, you're still technically in the league. And he's giving us this talk about, like, we're going to be watching you guys really closely this year. So let's just, like, you know, have a good season. Did you ever get a warning after that? Because that was a pretty polarizing moment, that game.
No, I never actually. I never talked to anybody until Yarncroak situation. And I think it was, who was it at the time? The French.
It was Stefan Quintal.
Yeah. And that, until that hearing. And I remember too, I was like, this is what it's like. Like, you know what it's like. You have like an hour prep for your hearing and then you have your hearing. And I remember, like, the second the hearing started, I threw everything that they prepped out the window. And I was like, it's like, no, like, if he's going to hit me from behind, I'm going to hit him in the face. That's how I'm known. Like, so I'm not hiding it. I'm not, I was like, no,
yeah, and
that works. And then I remember him saying, well, you know, he's not a fighter. And I said, so does that give him more or less reason
to
probably not hit me? And you know what I mean? Like, that, everyone always says, like, well, he's not a tough guy. Well, again, like I said, I always thought that there's should be a certain amount of bubble around us where, and this is how I was raised and in the hockey that I grew up, where if someone was more likely to punch me and I didn't want to be punched, I wouldn't go to do something to, you know what I mean? Like, so just because
if I see a pit bull in a caged in fence, I'm not going to go and poke the fence.
And then
I'm going to walk around.
Pit bull.
You know, and it's just, yeah. So I've had those hearings too, and it's all just a sham. They already know what they're going to give you. Yeah. And there's no defense. They ask you these questions, and I think you're right. It just goes out the window. I had an in-person one in New York where you go in there and the lawyers are there, and like, it was just all documented, but it's just it's all just a sham. Anyways, I'm going to get through this. I have some questions for you. Apart from that Islanders thing, which fight did you enjoy the most? Because again, if you don't want to, if it's a goal, let me know if it's a goal, but which one stands out where you're like, you know what? That I feel good about that one.
I don't know. I have a terrible memory too. So like half
good,
the time
good.
I'm more of like, you know, when someone else tells a story and then I'm like, oh yeah, I remember when that kind of happened to me too. Like, I don't know, my memory's.
Hey, I was there.
Yeah. I actually, that happens to me all the time. Like, guys I was actually home for a lacrosse tournament back home in Oshawa this weekend with my little guy. And a guy that I went to high school with was telling stories about me fighting that, you know, bouncers and or this and that.
Yeah.
And then I don't remember any of that, but okay.
That's so funny.
But yeah, I don't know.
All right, well, like,
I think obviously the Islander one really helped my career, at least put me on somewhere. I'd say, you know what, it's weird. The one that I was probably most nervous about, which it had nothing to do with the person, but was when Polak got jumped by Nurse and San Jose called me up. But that one, they like actually, like the media knew that I was coming up just to fight him.
Yeah.
And that one I was like, you know, like, this is great and I get it. I've got a lot of fights, but he's still a 6'3", whatever. Like, there's still a chance.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And so that one, now, obviously, once I'm playing, it goes out the window. But I remember being like, geez, and I'm like 27, 28. I'm like, well, if I don't do good this one, like, then
you're done.
I might not. And it was like a no fight. I hit him like once, and then the linesman came in. So, but it was just one of those. Actually, those Dilly, I asked him if he wants me to lined up beside Nurse. And I said, do you want to back up or do you want me to just give it to you right now? And he was like, well, I'm going to fight Dylan. And I looked back at Dilly on the blue line. And then so I'm like, if you skate by me, I'm going to slash you in the head on the way. So like, okay, we'll fight. And then I remember getting in the room and I was like, Dilly, don't be trying to steal my fights. Like, and he starts laughing. And I'm like, I don't see you lining up to fight Jansen. You're not stealing my Jansen fights or my Lucic. Like, why are you – don't steal my Darnell Nurse one either. Like,
I know, right? I'll take the cupcakes if I'm going to take the tough guys. I was actually – I was thinking about this too. How good of a feeling is it? You know, goal scorers score. You know, you swing by the bench, you get the fist pumps. Is there any better feeling than I loved it when you get in the fight at the end of the period and you're in the locker room? You win the fight and you're waiting for the boys to come in. And they come into the locker room and you're just like, come on, give it to me. Like, did you see what I just did out there? Like, how, I don't know. It's not really a question, but I'm just like, how good a feeling is that? Just to kind of get the boys fired up.
And you know what? And it actually does matter. Like in San Jose, you got Jumbo, right? Like I can hear him chirping everybody the whole time. Like, you don't want him. Oh, he got you. You know, like, and then when I was in Florida, the year that I led the league in penalty minutes and fighters, I had Yans. And Yandel, I actually multiple times had to tell him. Now, obviously, the league by then wasn't as crazy, right? But I remember I had come in the room, like, Yans, you can't yell funny things while I'm fighting. Like, I can hear you. Like, I'm trying to take this guy's head off, and I could hear you going, he'd be like, he's a bad man. Like, I could hear him yelling the whole time. Like, but it made it enjoyable for me, right? So, yes, it obviously makes it feel good. Like you said, someone scores a goal, people go and hug them and celebrate. So it's nice when you have a good fight and it works. I think the Gabranson fight was a good one when I was in Florida. Neither of us really landed anything or hurt, but him just being so tall. And I played with Goody. Yeah. He's an awesome guy, but that one was a good one. God, there's been a lot.
There's too many. You've been in hundreds of fights. It's crazy to go down the rabbit hole for your fights and then fight hockey fights. It's wild. All right, we'll wrap this up.
I'll tell you one good one. I remember.
Tell me a good
one. I was in Sarnia. I was young, maybe 17, 18, and there was a guy that came from the dub over to play in Owen Sound. His name was Robin Big Snake.
I know Robin Big Snake.
You know Robin Big Snake, right? When I was young, and he was a big native, and he had blonde hair and everything. And I remember I would try and get him to fight all the time, and he wouldn't fight, because especially back then, nobody fought. You know, if you fought anybody younger and small, it didn't help you, right? And then finally we fought, and I remember Owen Sound wouldn't let them take their helmets off. They would have to pay a fine. So then I took mine off, and I had to hit his before. But anyway, and it was like a minute long, really good fight. And that one I remember, because that was one where I was like, being that young, and I was kind of really nervous. And it wasn't just like a one-sided fight. It was we both took some. So I was like, oh. I think that was probably the start when I realized my head could – I got the head to take.
You could take the beating. That's funny. Those Indians. Cause I actually just got my status card in Canada. My, what was it? My great grandma was full blooded Cree. Oh. So I'm in the group now. I'm in the tribe, Cree Nation. Yeah. The benefits you get from being, Native American in Canada. My brother just got a check for $35,000 for doing nothing. And like, we're so white, you can see through us. Like we have no business having a status card. And he just like, I just got a check for 35 grand. I'm like, how the hell are you getting money? Like, this is bizarre. And he's like, there's another one coming in November. So you should probably get your card. So I just filed the paperwork actually yesterday. So I'm hoping that it goes through in time, but it's just like criminal. But yeah, anyway, so I don't take offense to you beating up one of my, my tribesmen, Robin Big Snake. I'll let that slide. All right. Michael, any advice for the kids? You got two boys. You've obviously done a job and you've been around. You played professional for over a decade. You got there the hard way. What would you say? Well, obviously, what do you say to your boys, you know, when they're going to the rink? What's the word of advice from Papa Bear?
Well, I coach them both in everything. And, you know, they're one is built identically to me. He looks just like me at that age. The other one looks like
5'2", 180 pounds.
Yeah, but he's more small. He's more, skinnier, and he's a firecracker. But I tell them both the same thing. They're both good athletes. They're both great little players. But I tell them the same thing, especially the bigger one, though, is like I said, that anybody that makes fun of you for getting knocked down or, you know, getting trucked or whatever, they're the ones that you will never see doing that, right? So lacrosse is a prime example. You know, and you play two ages. So when he's the younger age, there's some guys that are way bigger. And when a big guy's coming down, you know, one time he stepped out of the way and I was like, what are you doing? Like, why would you do that? He goes, well, he'll truck me. And I said, okay. Then he trucks you. And then maybe he steps on you when he goes over and trips and falls. And I'm like, anybody that makes fun of you for getting trucked, you will never see them in that exact same spot. They're going to get out of the way every time. I'm like, so don't ever, anybody that's going to chirp you for that isn't someone that you should value their opinion on that situation. Yeah. Right? So anyway, I think that's the most important thing in any sports. And I think in today's world, it's crazy. Everyone sees highlights and, accolades and everything. But really, what is pro sports? You lose over and over and over and over and over. That's pretty much every athlete, right? Golf, tennis, like you lose way more than you win, and you have to be able to keep going and learn from it. But that's my message to them all the time, is like anybody can give it. You need to learn how to take it and learn from it and try harder. But so far it's worked. They're good little boys. But
take a hit to make a play.
That's it.
Unless it's Cale Yonkrock, and then you don't. Well, then you get punched in the face.
Still made the play, though. Up the wall. Also,
up the wall, high and hard.
Also, I was playing center, awesome. If you didn't notice in that clip, too. Like, you got to be pretty good if you're playing at center.
Oh, you must have been losing by a lot then.
No, sometimes I played center. Wardo hated it because he knew he had to go low because I was always forechecking and hitting, so I'd never be the first guy back. So really,
he was one of the most underrated players, Joel Ward.
Oh, yeah.
Also guy was a stud. I played with him in Houston and Minnesota. Unbelievable player.
Yeah.
Loved his red stripes. Absolutely loved it. But all right, Michael, that's it, man. I've kept you for an hour. I appreciate the time, my friend. I could talk to you for a lot longer than this, but good luck, bud. Okay, say buddy. Hi to the family for me. Hopefully we cross paths again. That was fun.
Yeah. We'll wait till somebody else right. is there. Not our retirement jerseys.
No. I'm else. Hoping for Pavs next. Yeah. I keep in touch with him just in case he gets the jersey raised. I want to be invited again. That was a blast. You know, I pick my people. I'm like, okay, Vlasic, do I text him? I'm like, no, Pickles ain't getting the jersey raised. Yeah. So maybe Couture. All right, buddy. Well, thanks probably. For joining us. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Right, we appreciate the support. We'll talk to you later. Cheers, everybody.
Flowers and chocolates are all good, but Specsavers believe that one of the most romantic gestures you could make is to get your hearing checked. Relationships can be tricky at the best of times, so you'll want to avoid any misunderstandings. If you or your partner aren't quite hearing each other clearly, book a hearing check with a Specsavers hearing expert. Not only could it help tackle hearing loss, but it could improve your connection with each other too. For more information and to book your free hearing check, visit specsavers.co.uk.
It's time. The British and Irish Lions journey down under.
This is a fairy tale.
Legends will be written.
Are you kidding?
And Lions will be made. The British and Irish Lions series. Watch every match, including all three tests, live on Sky Sports.
Absolutely incredible.
Available to stream with Now. 18 plus UK only. Broadband 2.5 megabytes per second required.